With your money briefing, I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. The series of tariffs the U.S. has placed on Chinese goods could do a lot more permanent damage to relations between the two countries. We'll dive into the details on that in a moment. First, these money and market stories you should know. On Wednesday, the Federal Reserve announced plans to raise interest rates, the eighth such increase since 2015, but consumers have yet to feel a real impact. And while U.S. consumer borrowing costs have drifted higher in recent months ahead of the Fed's decision, those increases have generally been modest. Freddie Mac says the rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage averaged 4.65% last week. That's up from 4.54% on June 7th, and it's now at the highest level since 2011. And average rates on credit cards, auto loans, and home equity lines of credit have all risen since June 13th, when the central bank announced a quarter percentage point increase in its benchmark rate, and at the time, penciled in two more such moves this year. And sales of new homes in the U.S. rebounded in August following 2 months of declines. Purchases of newly built single-family homes, that's a relatively narrow slice of all U.S. home sales, rose 3.5% to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 629,000 in August. The South was the only region in the U.S. to see new home sales decline in August. In the longer term, sales grew 12.7% in August from the prior year. Still, the pace of new home sales remains well below the elevated level seen before the 2007 to 2009 financial crisis and recession.
The Wall Street Journal podcast are brought to you by American Express. The business world includes almost everything, so American Express covers almost everything. It's all connected. Technology needs business. Business needs government. Government needs technology. It's one big circle of backing that's supporting, advising, funding, and informing. It makes the business world go round. The bottom line is that it's way better when someone has your back. You really don't have to go it alone when you have American Express, because they have your back. Don't do business without it.
China canceled trade talks planned for this week as the Trump administration imposed new 10% tariffs on $200 billion of Chinese exports. And while many keep an eye on Wall Street's response to trade tensions with China, Wall Street Journal chief economics commentator Greg Ipp says the brewing trade conflict could inflict long-term damage between the two countries. And he joins us from our Washington bureau to discuss. So, Greg, the U.S. has imposed a series of tariffs on Chinese goods, but as you point out in your column, China so far indicates it has no plans to cave to U.S. demands.
Well, that's right. I think that the U.S. Actions are fairly aggressive, and its demands are also fairly sweeping. They want big changes to the way China runs its economy, less subsidization of domestic enterprises, fewer restrictions on what foreign companies can do, no pressure to transfer technology, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It amounts to wholesale demand that China change its economic model. And it's worth asking, and I think many are asking this, whether this is really intended to reach a negotiated settlement or simply to lay out demands that China cannot meet and set the stage for the two countries to basically disentangle the relationship that has built up between them over the last 15 years.
And there really is no blueprint to refer to that would indicate how this might play out.
Well, that's right. I mean, look to the two most relevant precedents. The Cold War with the Soviet Union was strictly a strategic rivalry. There wasn't really much in the way of economic ties between the United States and the Soviet Union. So you didn't have this strategic stuff spilling over to the trade sphere and vice versa. Back in the 80s, when there were all these conflicts between the U.S. and Japan over trade, that never really had any security implications because the U.S. and Japan were military allies. Today, you have, in addition to the well-known complaints about Chinese technology transfer and intellectual property theft hurting the U.S. economically, there's above that a level of concern that these practices are making China a more formidable adversary in military and geostrategic matters. And in China, you don't really have the difference between the state and the private sector that you do in other countries. And so there's this sense that when you are dealing with a Chinese company, you're dealing with the state and vice versa. Therefore, when the U.S. has these conflicts with Chinese companies and the Chinese state, it's really with a single entity. and that entity is not friendly to U.S. interests.
And China does quite a bit of business already with regions like the European Union and the rest of Asia, in addition to the U.S. Is it realistic that they could actually shake off a significant reduction of trade with the U.S.?
Well, I think they may not have much choice, and I think that's what China and many companies and countries in the region are beginning to look at. You have anecdotal reports of multinationals looking at moving some production and some assembly out of China into neighboring countries, places like Vietnam and Cambodia, for example. You have Taiwan and Thailand sort of like laying out the welcome mat for companies that want to set up there instead of in China. But it is entirely possible that over the next 10 or 15 years, notwithstanding the big loss to China of not being able to sell to the United States as much, they could begin to develop almost their own sphere of influence. They trade heavily with their neighbors. They trade heavily with the European Union. They have a lot of domestic endogenous capability. They didn't just get where they are by stealing other people's ideas. They have a lot of talent and engineering and scientific resources of their own. And plus, they have the second largest internal market in the world after the United States. Companies and countries that want to sell to that market will have to have a relationship with China.
And for companies that do business with China, you know, it might seem like a no-brainer to take their business elsewhere. And you mentioned some of the countries that could be on the short list if tariffs are driving up prices. But it's really not that easy to unwind all that. And plus, China has a very good infrastructure that makes production of goods pretty efficient.
Exactly. You don't just sort of like say goodbye to all that. And you do not find all the assets that you have in China that easily in other countries. So I think one thing that might happen is that multinationals may end up basically having two supply chains, one to serve the U.S. market, one to serve the China market. You might see, for example, some companies like Apple deciding they have to assemble some phones in the United States to escape American tariffs. We already have companies transferring some technology, some in cloud computing, for example. A lot of American companies are now required to store their data in China to adhere to Chinese laws. Increasingly, you might actually have companies establishing these segregated operations to serve those two spheres of interest.
All right. That is Wall Street Journal chief economics commentator Greg Ip joining us from our Washington Bureau. Greg, thanks for your comments.
Always a pleasure.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen in New York at the Wall Street Journal.